everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2025, and this is episode number 450, a big milestone. And today I'm having a conversation about Mission Impossible, the last in the series, and it's called Mission Impossible Final Reckoning. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Philip Tallon. He is an associate professor of theology at Houston Christian University. He's also the author of The Poetics of Evil. Phil has written a feature article that's a film review for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called The Living Manifestation of Destiny, The Meaning in the Mission Impossible Movies. And you can read his film review for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. And I know you'll be interested in this episode, especially if you have been here from the very beginning. 9 years ago, Phil was my very first guest on episode number one. We talked about the films of Quentin Tarantino. We're still talking about films today at the milestone episode of 450. Phil, it's good to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks, Melanie. Always a pleasure.
Well, I really particularly enjoy having Phil on this podcast because he was here at the very first episode that we did 9 years ago. So that's a lot of episodes. We're at 450 now that I just mentioned. And I'm just so grateful for the insights he brings to us through cultural apologetics and cultural artifacts. And I always appreciate the faculty from Houston Baptist University. And I encourage listeners to go back and listen to Phil's podcast. We also have Melissa Kane Travis and we have Dr. Luis Marcos. So there's a good variety of various of members of the faculty that you guys will enjoy hearing from and also reading their accompanying articles on our website, equip.org. But today we are going to talk about a series that probably some people weren't even born when it started back in 1996. Well, actually, that was the reincarnation of this series because it was on television much longer than that ago. I don't know, was it the 1960s or 70s or something like that? But this is Mission Impossible. I mentioned that we will be talking about this. It's also spoiler filled. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and want to get caught up to the series, then I suggest you come back to our conversation after that because we're going to spoil stuff. But tell us about the series as a whole, because some of our listeners, like I said, if they're younger, they're not probably familiar with just the whole series and its backstory and its popularity. And of course, this one that we're talking about in particular today is the eighth movie in the reincarnation featuring Tom Cruise. So where does Mission Impossible, this particular series, this Tom Cruise driven one, where does it fit within the Hollywood landscape?
Well, thanks. It's always a pleasure to be on. And we've been doing this so long that my university has even changed its name. We used to be Houston Baptist and now we're Houston Christian University.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys had a name change. I'm sorry about that.
It's all right. It's one of those hard habits to break. I find myself saying, oh, still HBU, it's HCU now. But we haven't been doing the podcast quite as long as the Mission Impossible series has been running. Yeah. So 1996, the first film came out. It was the first big effort of Tom Cruise and his then partner, Paul Wagner, as they were going to produce a vehicle for him. And whereas he'd worked with a lot of great filmmakers and auteurs, and he was a leading man, a top star in Hollywood. And the first film establishes a template that would hold for a lot of the first half of the series, which is that Cruise went out and found a director that had a distinct style. And so he paired with Brian De Palma, who's known for, you know, really kind of cerebral, twisty, you know, highly edited, very artsy thrillers. And they made this movie using a lot of the templates of the original TV show and its reboot, you know, which is espionage and deception and masks and stagecraft in order to pull off various heists and difficult missions. And the movie was successful. I remember seeing it in the theater with a bunch of other college age students, with a young woman who then later became my wife and a bunch of other friends. And it was a hit. But there was this funny thing that Cruise did, which I think is really unique for these major film franchises, which is that instead of having a consistent tone and style for those first four movies, he went out and he found directors with really distinct styles. So the second film was not like the first one, except that it had big action set pieces and masks and espionage. And he partnered with John Woo, who's known for this Hong Kong style, very balletic action, lots of jumping sideways, shooting two guns at once and doves. And then he partnered with J.J. Abrams for the third film. J.J. Abrams basically made an episode of this TV show Alias, but using the Mission Impossible big piees. And then by the fourth one, he partnered with Brad Bird, who's known primarily as an animator. And then the series kind of evened out a little bit more into having a they kind of figured out what they wanted to do, and he found Christopher McQuarrie, who's been his collaborator for the second half of the series. And so already, as I'm describing it, it's a somewhat unique enterprise, which is, you think a lot of the other big IP has a distinct style, and anybody who comes in is expected to take that on. Whereas Cruise, you know, had a very different vision. And so I think it's made it a pretty artistically interesting series to think about, to look at the variations. It's had some ups and downs. Some movies were more successful than others. And it's never been, I think, anybody's favorite, you know, series. Of course, now we have Star Wars movies and the MCU and there are other, you know, kind of popular works of IP that, you know, that dominate, but Mission Impossible has always been there, kind of periodically popping up as a crowd pleasing, fun, you know, mostly in the summer, kind of, you know, series of blockbuster movies that really focus on spectacle and incredible stunts that Cruise is now become famous for performing himself. And that was something that I think when the first movie came out, nobody really saw Cruise as an action star. Now he's so famous for running and for doing all of these things himself and for being one of the great actor/stuntmen of Hollywood history. So you think about Jackie Chan or even somebody like Buster Keaton all the way back, you know, Cruise is one of those few people that seems to really relish doing everything himself. And so he's got this incredible work ethic. So the movies, I think what's really most interesting about the films is that they are so fused with the producing and acting work of Cruise, and the character of Ethan Hunt and Tom Cruise kind of collapse into each other very often as you're watching them. So if you like thinking about movies and how they're made, then the Mission Impossible series is a really rewarding series. If you like thinking about big ideas and themes, maybe a little bit less so, but nevertheless still interesting to consider.
Well, one thing you said is that Tom Cruise has been in the series since the very beginning, which is way back in 1996, 30 years ago almost. And so he's now 62 years old. So he is definitely a senior citizen. So this particular film is called The Final Reckoning. Do you think this is the very last Mission Impossible, like the title suggests, final one?
Nobody really knows. All the suggestions in the film are that this is intended to be a bow that they're wrapping on the franchise. And so I wouldn't ever, you know, count Cruise out. You know, he's still, you know, doing, seems like he's in really good shape and he's got this insane drive. And so even if he thinks he's going to step out right now, sometimes it's, you know, it's just not the case that, you know, people get, you know, drawn back in, or they get excited about some new idea, or they come up with a new angle. But audiences, I think, reasonably should expect, seeing this, that this is their attempt to conclude everything. And you see a lot of evidence about that within the film. It's continually intercut with flashbacks from previous movies. One, and so spoiler, the other central character who's been in the series since the beginning, a character named Luther, played by Ving Rhames, he was there from the very beginning. He's one of the through lines. He dies in this movie, and the film concludes with a recorded monologue from him, with this big, you know, statement. And so, you know, I think that you would kind of reasonably expect this is probably it. And you know, Cruise is in good shape, but also he is starting to show signs of age. He's been weirdly ageless for so long, and you know, now he seems like he's starting to show signs of real human mortality.
I was thinking in the flashbacks that, wow, Tom Cruise looks so young, you know, when they did flashback to like the very first movie, because they do bring back a character from the first movie. And definitely that character has aged too, because yeah, it's been about 30 years. So let's talk about the films, because again, some people who are younger might not really know what some of these films are about if they haven't gone to watch all of them or weren't familiar with the television series from which it was born, I guess. Is there a present, like kind of a overarching worldview that is in the series? It seems like it's very much of more on the lines of a kind of a popcorn action film.
Mm-hmm. I think that if you wanted to situate the, as it were, the world of Mission Impossible, you'd group it with a lot of other political espionage, spy type films, whose main focus is on, you know, global dangers. So, you know, James Bond or Tom Clancy or Jason Bourne, and films like that. And so as such, the movies do not typically wrestle with a lot of the maybe sort of deeper, more profound questions in life. They're dealing with present political threats. There's a terrorist that's trying to launch nuclear bombs, or it's possible that this secret agent list of names is about to be released, and this will be a threat to the government's attempt to bring safety to the world through espionage. And so in that sense, I think the worldview is apparent by the degree to which it's bracketing out a lot of the other larger, you know, philosophical or spiritual concerns that we might have, which is to say we're sort of locked in what Charles Taylor might call that imminent frame, which is that everything that happens within the film is physical in maybe in both senses of the word. There's some awareness of the existence of religion, you know, maybe a Bible verse is used as a password, or the Tom Cruise breaks into the Vatican and dresses like a priest, or there's maybe a little bit of a sense of, you know, some life after death that comes up in the final film. But for the most part, you know, these are very much popcorn thrillers that, you know, that raise some danger, which everyone recognizes being worthy of stopping. And that danger is so intense that it warrants then taking on, you know, an impossible mission and endangering the lives of all the heroes who are putting themselves at risk. And so you might say that it's, you know, its worldview is kind of just a soldier's, you know, view of things. There's a threat, and I'm summoned to stop it. And so the primary ethical, you know, concern is about the degree to which we're helping people or hurting people, protecting people or threatening them. And the good guys are the protectors, and the bad guys are the threats.
It's June, as I've said the last few episodes, and it is time to think about our fiscal year end at our organization, which is a nonprofit, the Christian Research Institute. And this is a ministry of the Christian Research Institute, which is the Christian Research Journal. We've been around for almost 50 years. We started as a print incarnation, and then a couple of years ago went completely online so that we could give all of this content from almost 50 years completely free without a paywall, without subscriptions at equip.org. But because we do that, we would ask that you would prayerfully consider this month giving a partnering gift to the Christian Research Institute, or at least a tip. We would be so grateful for a tip that you would give us, because those tips add up together and they help us to continue to give you a free article every week without a subscription at equip.org, and also this podcast. So please do so if you'd like to give us a tip during our fiscal year end. Just go to equip.org and click on journal, then click on Christian Research Journal, and you will see the podcast, Postmodern Realities. And if you go to any landing page, you will find the link where you can go and give us a tip. Well, thank you so much for your partnership. And that includes doing all the things like rating us on Apple Podcasts and letting other people know about this podcast simply by word of mouth, emailing, or putting an episode, one of your favorites, on your social media accounts. Well, now back to my conversation with Dr. Philip Tallant about Mission Impossible. Well, I think, like, you know, if we think about classic stories and particularly iconic heroes, in this series, you know, Tom Cruise's main character, Ethan Hunt, is kind of a Superman with all his stunts, but and also there's something about that lately. You were talking about Marvel franchises, or how we've kind of gone into the franchise mode of in the last several decades with films, but he's both like practically a superhero with these daredevil stunts. I mean, some of them seem a little mind blowing. Can somebody do that? Go down to like the Mariana Trench, you know, be swimming out there without a, you know, suit on. He's like in his underwear or whatever, but also in an ethical way, like the ways that he's trying to deal, like you said, with some major threat from artificial intelligence or a rogue nation or something like that. And so it seems like they set him up that there's these things that are kind of ethically, I don't know necessarily black and white, more of on the gray side, but he particularly as a character is always black and white. And then he's got these superhuman skills, which seem like, would they do that? As a matter of fact, which is really interesting, is I was reading an article, I think it was in the New York Times or the Washington Post, where they actually asked the director of the spy museum, who used to be a CIA spy, to watch this movie and ask them, okay, could this happen? Could this happen? And he, some of the things that we think are a little far-fetched, like those masks that he takes off, he said, no, those have been used on the field. So I thought that was really interesting. But it's, so it sounds like, you know, there are certain things that he's done that human people do, but he has these, like you said, these stunts that he performs that just seem extraordinary and superhuman. So why do you think we like these kind of hero stories, you know, thinking about the Marvel universe? Even this isn't a Marvel universe. This is the real world universe, and something's threatening mankind. And here's Ethan Hunt out here to help save mankind. I mean, how do these kinds of stories resonate with us, with some of what we really desire as humans to believe in?
Ethan is a true hero, and so the anything set within contemporary political landscape, you know, sort of post Watergate, post are just a kind of awareness of the fallibility of all governments, and in a sense that, you know, nobody does things perfectly. You know, we see continually that the Mission Impossible force, the Impossible Mission force that for which Ethan works, is continually being disavowed, because the government, you know, doesn't want them going off and doing something, or because the government itself has kind of corrupt motives. But the Impossible Mission Force always does the right thing and knows the right thing to do. And one of the really interesting features of the film is, and the films throughout, is that you see continually it it seems like they're caught with a dilemma. Okay, you know, I save this person or I save this person. I you know, do I compromise or, you know, do I seek after the, you know, something that's pure, but it seems less likely to work. And the fantasy of the hero in many ways is a way of keeping before our vision, you know, a call to seek after doing what is truly right in the midst of uncertain circumstances. One of the great dangers, I think, that we continually face is when we compromise too quickly, right? We think something is impossible, and so then we, you know, we wind up we're just going to settle for the lesser of two evils because we think that's what's practical. So I think it's important that we tell ourselves stories of heroes who refuse to engage in utilitarian, consequentialist sort of reasoning. Okay, I'm going to do something that's kind of bad because I think it's going to lead to something good. No, and one of the things I loved about the MCU is a character like Captain America, you know, refuses to make that sort of calculation. He's going to fight hard for the thing that he believes is truly right and hope that everything will turn out well. And Ethan Hunt is the preeminent example of this. He doesn't want to let anybody on his team die. He's going to continually work to pull things off. They trust him. And because this is a story, he always has the ability to carry it off. Now, that's not how things work very often in the day in, day out reality in which we live. But it's important that we continually strive for this great good. And I think that's where you see heroes, and Ethan being one of them, as a kind of a messianic figure, right? As a great deliverer. And we're drawn to the story of Jesus because here we have somebody who refuses to engage in moral compromise, right? Who remains pure. And even when it seems like all is lost, through supernatural power is able to overcome and defeat evil. And so that is the hero that we need to continually be moving toward and doing what's right and living in hope that all shall turn out well. And so that, I mean, I can't think of anything more basic about our desire to interact with stories than to have that vision before our eyes and to be inspired, you know, to seek towards the greater good that we've perhaps thought is impossible. It's not impossible for Ethan, and often it's much more possible than we sometimes think. We get tired, beaten down by the world, we settle for less, but stories like Mission Impossible, you know, reignite our desire for more.
Well, that's really interesting. I also kind of sometimes think about Tom Cruise himself, as he's for sure this character in my mind in this final film is kind of set up as a messiah figure, mainly because according to the film.
But he is, like you said, there is a threat that's going to infect the entire world. And Ethan Hunt keeps getting told that he needs to care not just about the people he personally cares for, but the countless millions of souls.
For those we hold close and for those we never meet, right? That's the...
Exactly. That kind of idea, not just the people you know, but Hunt is going down the sacrificial path for all these other people too, to save them from this evil entity. Tom Cruise has paired with various different kind of directors along the way in this Mission Impossible series because he is very intimately involved as one of the producers and one of the main creative forces behind this entire series. So how does this series reflect maybe Cruise and maybe even his worldview? Because as many people know now, Tom Cruise is a Scientologist.
And we've got various articles on our website that talk about the beliefs of Scientology. But do you think there are any kind of religion that comes through it all in because of his own viewpoints, which aren't Christian, of course, Scientology, or just in general that the idea of religion and belief is important to him as someone creating the series?
Yeah, I think it's a question that everybody has in their minds, their thinking about Cruise, because we know that he's involved in Scientology. Scientology is not a very popular religion, but it has a little cohort of people, especially in Hollywood, who are engaged in very strange series of views. It does, unlike, say, John Travolta, who then adapted L. Ron Hubbard's Battlefield Earth, it doesn't seem to have crept into much of his thematic interests, you know, the sort of, you know, at least certainly not in the Mission Impossible movies. If there's a Cruise-like element that's present, it's the mirroring of the Ethan Hunt character and Cruise himself, which is this indomitable just force of nature who's continually sort of trying to do the best thing. And the production of these films, it is continually like an impossible mission. They come up with these big, crazy stunts that seem like they should be impossible, and he just works tirelessly to pull them off. So the high altitude, low opening jump that they do in Fallout, you know, they practice that thing 200 times because the cameraman's jumping with him. He needed to figure out how they could actually see that it's really him doing it. And almost no other actor in Hollywood is dedicating that amount of time to pulling things off. So he's an incredibly driven person. So there you see, and so Ethan Hunt's incredibly driven, Tom Cruise is incredibly driven. And then the sort of improvisational nature of a lot of these missions where they're trying to figure out how to do something. Okay, we got to do this. And everybody's flummoxed. How are we going to do that? And Ethan will say, we'll figure it out, you know, and that is a refrain on the set of Mission Impossible. Cruise continually saying, what if we did this and it would make it even better? And everybody goes, oh my goodness, that's so crazy and so hard. How are we going to do that? And they say, well, we'll figure it out. And so this is back to what I said previously, which is that I think if you want to think about the Mission Impossible movies, then the most rewarding avenue for reflecting on them is about their existence as movies, their production, the things that go into it. And there's, I think, a really admirable quality within Cruise's work habits, which is that he seems to be really invested in leading the group well, so he doesn't behave like a entitled star. He learns the names of people all the way down the line. He's comes to set even on his days when he's not shooting. He's all in, right? So he's the one who's leading from the front, right? The general that's leading the charge continually and has the most energy and enthusiasm. And then they've obviously created a character that is essentially a fictionalized spy version of the man himself. And that, you know, Cruise's personal life seems really rocky and bad, you know, just he's got lots of estranged relationships, of course, multiple divorces, as you know, some of his kids he's not close to. He just seems to work all the time, right? Doesn't have good work-life balance. But his leadership behavior as a producer and an actor is kind of impressive as an example of how to be a fully engaged, enthusiastic, personable leader. And so I sometimes look to creatives for insight on how one should be in the world. And I think that we can learn a few things. We shouldn't learn everything from how Cruise operates in his work life, but definitely being all in, excited, you know, tirelessly enthusiastic and never willing to settle for less is a valuable example for us, I think.
So this film, Mission Impossible Final Reckoning, very much had mixed reviews from critics. There was not an overwhelming positive response to it. I don't know so much about fans, what they're thinking, but what did you think about this film?
I thought it was one of the messiest of all the films, and I'd probably put it right toward the bottom of the series, maybe not last, but perhaps second to last in terms of its overall quality and coherence. The improvisational production nature of their filmmaking, I think, you know, fails them at times, which is they don't have a clear script. They have to know some of these big pieces that they're going to put in there. And so, and it feels weirdly cobbled together, and some things, you know, why they're doing them is not obvious at all. There's also an attempt to retroactively create continuity within the series, which this has never existed sort of going forward. They're sort of looking back and trying to make sense of everything that's happened as if all of this was intentional, and that the results there are somewhat laughable. It's long too. It's a long film with a lot of, I think, unnecessary, you know, plot diversions. But the big reason why I think any reasonable person is going to pay $15 to go see Mission Impossible is to see on the big screen some of the best executed film stunts in recent years. And there are two scenes in particular, the submarine scene where Cruise descends down to a Russian submarine and then moves through it half underwater is so intense that you're, I mean, it was one of those really like edge of the seat kind of moments, incredibly well crafted. And then the final biplane duels, there are two biplanes flying along that are battling and Cruise's climbing and jumping is also just marvelous. And they've shot it in IMAX. And so if you go see it in IMAX, they'll lift the curtain and you'll see it in this big aspect ratio. And that's, again, one of those things, which if you just love the craft of making movies, this commitment to practical effects and really just excellent cinematic storytelling, those two things, I think, carry most of the audience out afterward. Oh man, that scene, that plane sequence was so exciting that you maybe forgive some of the sins of the film. But nobody's gonna, Mission Impossible is not Star Wars. It's never had this sort of sanctity of being a holy text, like in, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars or something that's being ruined. The series has always been kind of goofy and up and down. And so if you like previous Mission Impossible movies, I think you'll have a good time at this one. And it's also interestingly dealing with AI and some of the potential threats in a way that is surprisingly prescient and trying to make a little bit of cultural commentary. So you have run amok AI. I think everybody already has a sense of what this might look like. The AI is creating all sorts of false information, so you don't know what to trust online. And then you have now in this final film, people have become acolytes of the AI. They become so obsessed with.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. There's like this AI cult. I don't think they really explained how a religion kind of sprung up from this AI that's kind of like all knowing or something.
Yeah, it's Rocco's Basilisk, if you're familiar with that thought experiment, which is people sort of serving an evil artificial intelligence in the hope of then being rewarded. And so the movie has one of the few big jokes in the film is that Cruise has to fight off somebody who's become an acolyte of the AI. And as he's beating him up, he says, you know, you're spending too much time on the internet. And so that feels like the funny commentary of a 60 something, you know, year old man who's kind of telling a younger generation of just like, get out and live your life and stop spending so much of your time online.
Well, I think that, I'm not sure that this was the biggest send-off for the series. I think maybe they could have stopped it a few movies ago. And also, if I don't know if we mentioned that this is part two of the first movie. Part one came out last year, and this is part two. So I don't know that I recommend somebody watching it as part one and part two together. I don't know if it would make more sense that way. But for sure, it was interesting to see the stunts, and if people go online, there's articles about how they film that, those, especially the stunts on the plane. The director was talking about how, you know, yes, they're flying at a lower altitude, but you don't really have any oxygen up there and all different kinds of things. So it's very fascinating, but I just do think it's been an interesting ride for sure. And I would encourage people at least to go back to some of the earlier films, especially the first few films. They were just very much on the edge of your seat, kind of big blockbuster type films.
If folks are looking to to just watch one. I think that that Brad Bird's Ghost Protocol is, you know, is one of those that, you know, that really works. Basically, kind of can stand on its own. That they're playing with some of the previous lore, but I think cinematically, that's just, you know, absolutely one of the best. And the middle chunk of movies, I think, are really where the series is at its strongest. And so, you know, 4, 5 and 6, especially, you know, Fallout, I think a lot of people point to as being, you know, another, like, the best of the Christopher McQuarrie directed films. And so I'd say check those out. As far as being kind of family friendly, not so much with, I think the second film is maybe a little bit stranger, but a lot of the movies are relatively sexless, you know, just kind of, they're primarily about the work. They tend to be relatively clean compared with some other major Hollywood movies. And so they're not, I think they're perfectly commendable, high octane, you know, summer popcorn films that a lot of people would enjoy. If you have not watched the Mission Impossible series, do not start with this last one, because all of the callbacks and nostalgia will be lost on you.
Yeah, I would say try to get into a few of them, or at least Wikipedia the ones, a few of them. But I would say go back, because some of the other ones I think are a little bit more iconic. And in case people might not know this, you mentioned Brad Bird, and he is the guy responsible for the Pixar film The Incredibles, which a lot of people mm-hmm. have watched and probably enjoy. So definitely go back and look at some of the other ones. Well, finally, I have a rapid fire question for Phil. Phil, we're talking about Mission Impossible, and before we started this podcast, we were just talking about different films that are coming out. So is there any kind of film, whether serious or popcorn film, that you're looking forward to seeing this summer?
Oh, well, this summer, let's see what else is
you got coming DC out. Coming up, Superman, you've got Jurassic Park coming up.
I am interested in Superman. I'm curious to see what they do with it. One of the things that with the DC cinematic universe is, I think they've been searching for different tones, and this Superman film seems like it's really trying to bring back a little bit of a more colorful, literally more colorful and kind of old fashioned vibe. With you've got Crypto the dog, and you've got you know, Hawk Girl, and so I hope that they really have a fun time with Superman, as opposed to some of the Zack Snyder films that were very heavy and weighted with significance. And so, yeah, that is certainly one of the ones that's on my list. And we just a big fan of the MCU on the whole. And so we saw Thunderbolts and liked it. And Fantastic Four is also coming out. And so I'm curious to see what they do with Fantastic Four as well.
I am too, because of the actors that are involved in it, I guess we see him in more, well, not always, serious fare, but Pedro Pascal is one of the Fantastic Four. So I'm interested to see this reboot of the Fantastic Four and see what it's going to be like. So it's definitely going to be a summer filled with a lot of superhero type movies. So thanks, Phil.
Yeah, there's a new Wes Anderson coming out too. Right. So yeah, I'll definitely go see that.
Yeah, Wes Anderson is a very quirky filmmaker. So if people like some of his things, you might not want to miss that. Well, thanks, Phil, for being here with us on 450. We are very grateful that you're here, and it's always good to talk to you about movies.
It's always a pleasure, Melanie. Thanks for having me back.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today is episode number 450, a big milestone, 9 years into podcasting and starting this podcast. And we look forward to keep going on this podcast. And we'll look forward to Phil joining us for episode 500 coming up next year. But in the meantime, you will want to read his article, The Living Manifestation of Destiny, The Meaning in the Mission Impossible Movies, and you can find that for free without a paywall at equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. And it was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.